Welcome to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. I'm Alan Park. These are the Conspiracy Queries. It's getting crazy now. I'm starting to feel like maybe we need to put more things in the show. We're still having great interviews with wonderful people, and we're going to need to add some new elements soon to cover different aspects here in a one-hour show. So before we get to that, that'll be coming soon, so look forward to some of those changes. Today's guest is Lisa Falcon G. She's a researcher. She's a truth seeker. And she believes that a lot of the problems that we have in the world are solvable. And she has some 3 years worth of research to figure out exactly how she thinks that might happen. Her book is called Universal Hidden Insight. And it's available, you know, where books are sold, if you can find a store that does that. If not, try Amazon, and it's available on there as well as a digital download, as you will learn shortly. She is someone that I met last year at the Modern Knowledge Tour, which is a great roundup of some very heavy thinkers like Richard Dolan and Michael Tellinger and a lot of other fascinating people who are really trying to bring forth some new understandings and awarenesses. So she will be joining us shortly. But now I have to say, in this day of terrorist attacks on a constant cycle and people going to ISIS and the police beating everybody up, it's not everybody. There were a couple of people got away unscathed. It's getting to be quite the world out there, isn't it? And I know that I have not yet gotten to the full cause of how and why and what to do about it, and I guess I never will. But I sure – my life has been affected doing this show. I've changed some things and understood a lot more than I used to just from asking questions. That's all you have to do. You have to ask questions. If you don't know, you have to ask questions. They don't like you asking questions either. You're always supposed to be giving answers, not asking questions. All right. First, some really horrible news. And it's not ISIS. It's not any of that stuff. It's Fukushima. Yes, Fukushima. We have not gone back there for a while, both not on the show and not in our minds. But it's still there, and apparently it's worse. From Energy News, or enenews.com. It says Fukushima released 13 trillion times more neutrons than initially estimated. Now, how one estimates a neutron is beyond me, but it sounds scary. Obvious implication for human health, it says. What's that, like cancer? I might have a few thoughts on this topic a little later. The government says that the neutron radiation is the most severe and dangerous radiation known to mankind. Oh, good. Also, it can travel great distances. Scientists from the Tokyo Institute of Technology and the University of California, San Diego, and Kyushu University made these stats available, that they estimate a lower limit of 5.2 times 10 to the 21st power of slow neutrons. Okay, that sounds pretty gross. I'm going to skip by some of these technical things and just get right to the effects. It says evidence of the neutron leakage, despite the obvious implication for human health. It says there are no quantitative estimates of the neutron flux leakage, and that tons of seawater were used as a coolant, a consequence that salts and minerals present in seawater become radioactive by reaction with thermal neutrons. And they calculated the total number of neutrons that leaked from the reactor core and estimate that a total of 4 times 10 to the 11th power of neutrons. Sounds scary. I didn't go to that kind of school. Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Coordination says that neutron radiation is a kind of ionizing radiation, which consists of free neutrons. Oh, it sounds great. Neutrons readily pass through most material, but interact enough to cause biological damage. Neutron radiation is considered to be the most severe and dangerous radiation available, and they do travel great distances. Okay, so that's what's happening. Remember, while all of this other stuff is going on, these beatings and people getting attacked, and I mean by police. I mean here in North America, and it's been getting worse and worse, and I think it has a lot to do with the lowering of the IQ that is required for the man to join the force or the woman to join the force. They can't be that smart. It's not a good idea. And that's what they say. You know, that's what the people that hire them say. They say it's not a good idea if they're smart, because then they won't follow orders. So basically, you need to be dumb to follow a bad order. And I guess they know they're giving bad orders, so they know they need to be dumb. Ooh. Now, this sounds a bit of a maybe conspiracy theory, but I'm not going to ask this question. I'm just going to go right to the facts of it. And maybe you don't believe this. Maybe you don't. It sounds too good to be true. It's not. It's actually the case that years ago, of course, policemen were a lot more friendly and in the neighborhoods and walking around in the beat. But of course, there's not a lot of money in that, I guess. It's a bit strange that around 1999 or 2000, there was almost a North America-wide decision made to make sure that candidates had a less than impressive IQ. And I knew this was going on in 1999 or 2000. They decided to enact this. I'm sure there were a lot of intelligent police officers on forces that were hired before then. But since then, it's been pretty easy as long as you can operate a pencil sharpener and, you know, walk around. So that's what basically has been happening. And it was around 90 or 100, I think it was. They lowered it to no more than 90 or 100. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a new level. And so what they've done now is, I just found this out by asking questions, and I've come up with a report. This is, you know, mainstream news, so it must be true. And it's from September 8, 2000. So it's 15 years old news, okay? But I have a reason for talking about this. Stick around. A man whose bid to become a police officer was rejected after he scored too high on an intelligence test has lost an appeal in his federal lawsuit against the city. The second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New York upheld a lower court's decision that the city did not discriminate against Robert Jordan because the same standards were applied to everyone who took the test. This kind of puts an official face on discrimination in America against people of a certain, it says here, class. But I don't think it has to do with class, whether or not you're able to, you know, figure out how to read. Jordan said today from his Waterford home, "I maintain you have no more control over your basic intelligence than your eye color or your gender or anything else." Well, he's not that smart. That's what that guy said. He says, "This is the cop I never knew was going to go this way, folks. I didn't read it beforehand. I read it a long time ago." It says, "I maintain I have no more control over your basic intelligence than your eye color or your gender or anything else." Well, you can get smarter. I guess you can also get dumber, too. But I don't have any meth addicts on the show. He said he does not plan to take any further action. Now, remember, this is 15 years ago. This guy's 65 years old now. He took the exam in 1996 and scored 33 points on his police graduate test. And that's the equivalent of an IQ of 125. But the New London police interviewed only candidates who scored 20 to 27 on the theory that those who scored too high could get bored with police work and leave soon after undergoing costly training. Can't be too bright to do this job. Most cops just above the normal are the average score. The most cops just above normal. The average score nationally for police officers is 21 to 22. Or just a little bit above average. So I guess they're saying 100 is average. So you just want them a little bit above average. Jordan alleged that his reaction from the police force, 3, 2, 1, woo! Jordan alleged his rejection from the police force was discrimination. He sued the city, saying his civil rights were violated. Hey, this is back in 2000. He says that police were violating his civil rights for leaving him alone. Oh, God, things have really changed the past decade and a half. He says he was denied equal protection under the law. This guy's a harbinger almost for the rest of us. But the U.S. District Court found that New London had shown a rational basis for the policy. Yeah, that basis is, that they don't want to waste their training on them. You know, they don't want to do that. Or a guy that's smart enough, once he realizes the crap that's going on in there, is going to walk away. Yeah, either climb to the top and get a desk job and tell people what to do yourself, or walk away. So that was in 2000. That's 15 years old. Sorry for the old news. I'm so sorry. That's old news. Turns out, though, that that's pretty low. So that mindset of needing to lower the IQ of police that was triggered approximately 15 years ago, to me, matches pretty well the timeline of the gradual and steady and more obvious increase in police brutality all around North America, and probably in other parts of the world too. I don't see as much of that kind of information around police brutality. It doesn't seem to be as much, though. But then again, I guess there's no other country famous for lowering the intelligence scores of their employees, or hoping that they will be unintelligent when they hire them in the first place. Okay, sorry, this is funny. It's very serious. Very, very serious business. Well, what I'm saying is, it just seems that, you know, people over the time, they have said, it's just that everyone has a cell phone now or a camera. So that's why you're seeing more of these things. They're being captured. That's a valid theory. And I think that that is definitely affecting our ability to see these things. But I really don't think, from talking to people that I know, I don't think it's really gone up all that much because of phones. I think that's part of it, but it's also just gone up because they're friggin' dumber. I mean, they're enshrining this. You know, it says it right on the hiring practices. They don't really want them above 100. And if this was enacted 15 years ago in that town, and it's rolled across over the past several years, well, I think this is a major plank for why we are dealing with this. Intelligent people don't do the things that you so often see on YouTube. They just don't. And if you're a police officer now listening to this, which I find hard to believe unless there's an investigation going on, I'm not trying to personally insult you. These are statistics and they're facts, and you can research. Well, probably with 100 or less, you're not going to do any damn research. Okay, I'm wasting my time. Fine, anyway, point being, there's a lot of trouble these days with the police. And what about this? What are we going to do about it? And they are just the footmen. This is a plan. It's got to be a plan. Why do you just enshrine stupidity on the enforcers of policy against the citizens in a supposedly free country? Why does something like that happen? Well, people run the system, so people must be making decisions that they have studied and researched and believe that they think is the best thing for them. And I think having less than intelligent, obedient dogs to sort of do your dirty work is something that a very, very evil and smart man with a lot of money would want to set up and protect himself, you know, from the Occupy movements and these kinds of things. And who are those people? Well, someone smarter than me said the most famous people in the world are not the most powerful. The most powerful, you don't even know them. You've never heard of them. I'd like to find one of those fellas if I can. But some of them are famous, and some of them do a lot of damage without needing to be unknown from the public. And this author of the Fourth Reich, George Bush Sr., you remember that his dad made a lot of money in trading with the enemy, which was Nazi Germany at the time. Three times he got busted, and it didn't matter because he made his profits, and his son went on to become, as it is stated by Stu Webb in Veterans Today, an evil pedophile, George Bush Sr. This is from Stu Webb's Veterans Today. We're going to get Stu back on the show. He's got a great article out. We're going to go through it a little bit, you know, because it really is fascinating to know that in a time of a lot of people pointing to the research of the fact that politicians, entertainers, and people in high society, you know, are pedophiles. I don't even want to know how to pronounce the word. And they pass people around in this. You know, people that say these kinds of things have been roundly ridiculed for years and years. Lots of them. There are several researchers out there. I won't favor any at the moment. But several people have been saying these types of things, and those people have been laughed at and ridiculed for so long. It's unbelievable. But more and more now, we're starting to find out that Prince Andrew is in trouble because maybe he was doing that with his friend Jeffrey Epstein, who was already convicted of child molestation and, you know, this kind of sick. But what you don't hear is a lot of further criticism of the same researchers that pulled this stuff into the light in the first place. Therefore, those researchers, to me, are people that also have avenues into other things that we should and will soon know and currently don't. And they're being laughed at for those things. And when those dark things come to light, they just get ignored again. It's a bit of a game. But here we go. Veterans Today. George H.W. Bush is a known evil pedophile who ran a congressional blackmail child sex ring during the 80s known as Operation Brownstone and Operation Brown Star. Brown Star. I'm not going to ask that question. I don't know. I don't really want to know where they came up with that. And later to become known as the Finders or the Franklin Cover-Up. U.S. Vice President George H.W. Bush would sneak children over to Senator Barney Frank's condo, known as the Brownstone. Oh, okay. To their famous cocktail parties where U.S. congressmen and U.S. senators, some willing and some unwilling participants, got a taste of the voodoo drug in their drink. I'm not sure if Bill Cosby was ever at one of these things. To prove a case, you need one that was involved in an operation, or a witness, or documents. In this case, U.S. Customs documents prove the case without getting anyone still living killed. Inside the document below, and it's on the website, is an article that appeared in U.S. News and World Report over 20 years ago, December 27, 1993, entitled Through a Glass Very Darkly. This includes cops, spies, and a very old investigation, also copies of the U.S. Customs report where the names are not blacked out. You may have purchased a set with the names blacked out from dirty FBI CIA blackmailer Ted Gunderson, a known thief, liar, and killer. Again, this is the words of Stu Webb, I'm quoting. A true Daddy Bush FBI troll who surfaced in the 90s to run cover for Bush and to identify those children who still may be living, who could be a liability to Bush. Gunderson and CIA George Pender's congressional child sex blackmail operation known as Brown Star. Ted Gunderson surfaced in the early 90s as the so-called investigator in the Franklin savings and loan case against Larry King, a black Republican, not the old guy that used to ask questions on TV, who introduced George H.W. Bush at the 1988 Republican convention as America's next president. Gunderson was there to rid any witnesses or children from Boys Town, the orphanage for all boys, many of whom had been transported to Washington in D.C. and raped by these pedophiles in the Bush-Gunderson-Pender sex child ring, child sex ring known as Operation Brown Star. I'm getting tired of saying that name. I won't do it again. The true story never has been told. The children from orphanages all across America during the 80s came to D.C., paid for by the taxpayers, to unknowingly participate in the congressional blackmail child sex ring. Daddy Bush, Dick Cheney, John Sununu, according to sources, would be standing in line to greet the children and their caretakers as they came to the vice president's home and or the White House for their specially invited tour at U.S. government expense. This is called the Franklin cover-up, by the way, if you're just joining us and offended. I'm not saying these things. I'm not advocating these things. I'm quoting a man who has researched these things. Yeah, it's gross. Like, we didn't know Cheney was bad enough. Oh, gosh. Anyway, Bush, Cheney, and Sununu would ask, "What's your name?" And later, just before dinner time, a call from the White House came into the hotel where the children were staying to the caretakers, inviting little Billy, Mary, Johnny, Timmy, and Pam to the White House state dinner that evening. The caretakers thought it would be good for the children, since the White House could not accommodate the entire orphanage. Gunderson and Pender, who ran the operation, dispatched the limo at Bush's request, and the female would take the children to the limo and immediately give them a Coke or a Pepsi with the voodoo drug in it, and they were off to U.S. Senator Barney Frank's pad, known as... Of course, the U.S. Senator and U.S. representatives were there with the good-looking female prostitutes who would help get the congressmen and senators drunk on the voodoo drug, so when Daddy Bush, Dick Cheney, John Sununu, and others showed up at the party and the children in the limo arrived, the female prostitutes left, and the child sex party started with the U.S. Vice President George H.W. Bush, Richard Cheney, let's call him Dick Cheney, and John Sununu and others showing the voodoo drunk congressmen and senators how to have sex, raping children. While the cameras were running, someone pretending to be from the White House would call the caretakers back at the hotel and would tell them the children fell asleep and are staying the night here at the White House and they'll be returned before lunch tomorrow. The caretakers did not suspect a thing until 6 months later when their children were sitting in front of the TV watching news and waiting for dinner, and many would jump up and point to the TV and say, "He put his thing in me," as the children pointed to either their rectum or their front side if they were a female. The caretakers began to ask questions and did not know whom to call. Some called People magazine, which spent $1 million investigating all of America's orphanages and found this was true, with those children selected out of the White House being greeted by these known pedophiles. The story was never told by People magazine. The journalist I talked to on many occasions in the late 80s and 90s was never allowed to publish this story. But it's all here, and you can Google. Do Google the Franklin cover-up. There's a great photograph where it was actually on the front page of a newspaper. I don't know how long that newspaper was out, but it was captured, and it is circling around. So while we talk about horrible things such as police going insane because they've been designed to, like a dumb dog that's kept in a cage and poked and poked and poked, smart dogs don't do that kind of stuff. Angry, prodded, poked dogs do. We've had this rolling on out across our heads for the last 15 years. It's got to stop. It's getting worse, though. And so we need to find out ways to get our minds past this kind of garbage. And not just by ignoring it, but by transcending it. And hopefully that is what we're going to find out right about now from our guest, Lisa Falcon G. Please sit back and open your mind a little bit. And now, let's go to our interview. Lisa and I met at a conference last year in Toronto that was put on by some great guys called the Modern Knowledge Tour. And we were enjoying a lot of presentations, including those of Richard Dolan, who has been on the show before. You guys know that. And Lisa and I got along quite well, and she was telling me then she was writing a book. So it's done. God, that takes a long time, doesn't it? And Don, your website, it says that your book that took as long as it did to research and put together is more than a book, but a movement and a call for change. Absolutely. Now, Obama called for change. You don't mean that kind of thing.
Not the change we're really looking for here, I think, but yeah. We definitely didn't get the change we were promised. I think that's pretty clear.
No.
But, you know, it seems a lot like he might be really just a poor puppet of this kind of, you know, backdrop of people controlling the show, unfortunately. And I think a lot of that is coming to light, at least in my own research, as bigger business. You know, the big oil companies are very influential. Monsanto, there's a lot of conflicts of interest, and those need to be addressed.
Right. As it says on your website, and I guess that's a part of your book. A lot of your book is to center yourself and go within and be still and listen. And is this meditating? Is that what you're talking about? Or is there something more to it?
I think that it's important not to get attached to one specific way. And I think that that's something that we've kind of lost ourselves, you know, dividing ourselves in all the different paths. But I think there's many paths. And I think one of the greatest hopes that we have for changing the world is to transform on an individual level and change how we're living our lives. And I think if we become balanced and become aware of ourselves more and our connection to everything, in whatever way we kind of, you know, find that, I think that's a beneficial to the world, because we'll treat others better. We'll have compassion. That's very important at a time like this, when so much hate and so much discrimination and stereotypes, you know, everything's being played on and encouraged. We need to, I know it sounds utopian, but I really believe we have to kind of come together and treat each other better.
Okay. Well, that's a good point of view. You've got a lot of great stuff in here. You've got a records library and a lot of things you've written about, a lot of cool, fascinating topics that, you know, people don't really think about when they crack open the latest digital copy of the Huffington Post.
Absolutely.
How about this? Massive acoustic generator from ancient Peru. DNA can be reprogrammed with thoughts, frequencies. Let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about DNA reprogramming. How do you do that? And have you done that?
I don't know that I've done that as far as reprogramming my DNA, but I do know that everything's based on energies. You know, if you get, and I'm no scientist, but this is just based on my own research. If you look at some of the work of people like Bruce Lipton, you know, cellular biologist, he wrote a book called The Biology of Belief. And it really, he started out as a professor, and he basically found that cells would become sick or heal themselves based on no other factor except for the environment that they were placed in. And I think to take that even farther, and this is where he kind of took it, is that your own body is your environment, and we influence the environment that our body's in. And it gets into positive language, positive energy, which I hope more and more science will be done on that, and kind of draw together the spiritual and the scientific aspects. I think that's a bridge that needs to be built.
That sounds something like German New Medicine. Are you familiar with that?
I am not. I'd be interested to hear more.
That's another three scary words put together. German New Medicine. No, it's pretty interesting. I won't go there because that's not what you're talking about, but you should check it out sometime. It's pretty neat. I believe it embodies a lot of those characteristics and qualities that you're discussing. So let's say that you are so into the research. Let's go back a little bit. You're so into the research. Like, how did you come to the, let's say, what did you read or what did you find or what did you hear? Who did you listen to that one day you went, oh, God, Lisa, I got to start researching more about this. And then so you did. And then I'm sure you didn't say right at the beginning, I'm going to write a book at the end of all of this. But how did your eyes open?
Yeah, there's been a number of paradigm shifting books, like books that really blew my mind. You know, The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life was really a gate opener for me. And then there's been certain topics that I think have really opened my eyes. Understanding the truth about 9/11 was one of them, because once I recognized that, you know, that there's this place and time, at least in this one instance when I can't trust my government, that really opens me up to now question my government in many ways. And so that's a, you know, a paradigm shifting topic. Things like UFOs, if you get into some of the ancient history and look at how much we're kind of missing, and that's been covered up. So those have just been fascinating to me. I want to know the truth about the human experience and get to the core of that. And, you know, I think that's something we all kind of seek. And it's,
did you notice a shift in your friend base at the time you were making that transition?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of people that are very comfortable kind of like living within the system that we've been geared towards. And it's comfortable to continue to do that. But I think if we look in a responsible way at what's happening across the world due to, you know, us neglecting the truth, specifically in the West, especially out of the United States, you know, when we look at the effect that we're having on the world, objectively, you know, it's very difficult to continue to live the way that we're living and continue to perpetuate this system that's really harming a lot of the world, in the environment, politically, socially, you know.
Yeah. So, I'm kind of enjoying watching the oil free fall, because I know it's irritating a lot of those people that were really comfortable with the way things were. I take a little schadenfreude out there. Canada's Texas, a.k.a. Alberta, is taking a bit of a hit right now, and some people are losing their jobs, but I guess they weren't really listening to the rest of the country and the world for the last 10 years going, hey, you guys are raping the planet. So I guess I'm not all that upset about a rapist being, you know, let go of in his employ. Anyway, I know we do need oil, and we do need some kind of, you know, propulsion system. I'm just pretty sure that doing oil it the way they're doing it is not the way to make it happen.
Certainly wrecking a lot of the earth, and there's a lot of movement that's happening with Keystone XL. And in the United States right now, they're looking at whether or not they're going to ban it. New York just happened to ban, you know, the pipeline running through here, which is a win. But, you know, it's one step forward, two steps back. And a lot of times things will get overturned. So it's just something we have to meet and match the momentum, I think, that's happening of the forces that are working, kind of pushing these malicious agendas that are irresponsible and that are unsustainable.
Well, I think, you know, this has a lot to do, don't you, with why it is that it seems that the conservatives and the Republicans and anybody on the right, if you look it up, they're almost always on the wrong side of history, particularly in societal advances and you know, the evenness between the rights between men and women and straight and gay people, everything else. They're always behind the curve. It's so funny sitting there. They put this idiot Ted Cruz in charge of NASA the other day. I mean, this guy's ridiculous. Oh, God.
I think it's an excellent way to put it, and I think that that's something I'm very conscious of, and we should all be conscious of that. The fact that, you know, my name might not be remembered, you know, no matter how famous you become, you know, what we'll be remembered for is what we collectively do together. And right now I do feel like on the wrong side of history as an American, not representing what's happening, you know, in the government. I don't agree with the actions of our government, but I do know that, you know, Americans are going to go down in history as having, you know, a terrible plight over the world. And it's something I want to be at least part of the movement that really tries to counteract that, and at least show that there are still people that are awake and aware and that care about what happens to the planet and other people, you know, that aren't pulled into being divided against different groups of people based on lies that they try to generate through the media.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, take us through, if you can, in sections through your book. Just, you know, don't read the whole thing, obviously, but let's just start off with how you introduce your concepts and basically, you know, some of the more noticeably profound chapters in your book. That's unfair to say. I'm sure you think it's all profound, but you know what I mean? See if you can put a couple of things together. And I think it's pretty interesting as a gradual taste of what it is you're researching and discovering, but I kind of want to get more specific now.
Absolutely. So it really starts out kind of bringing attention to how important it is to kind of be fluid and to have an open mind and to recognize that there's so much that we don't know, you know, and science and in history, and about the truth of what's happening in the world around us. There's so much that's happening behind the scenes. So I think that's a really important concept to start out with, is to have an open mind. So this is really, I would like to think that this is a good book to start somebody out with that doesn't maybe know about these topics, if you want to introduce these things to someone. And the philosophy and approach that I took is I tried to look from every angle, because I feel like if you look at every angle objectively, somewhere you're going to have a core resonating almost like a universal truth. And that's kind of when you can start to put it together. No one can tell you, you know, what the truth is. And then there's parts of it that kind of go through being able to figure out a way for yourself to go within and to become balanced and to master your life. And I think that that's really important. We need to begin to understand, you know, that our consciousness, that we're affecting each other, that what we're doing in our lives, not only physically doing, but, you know, energetically. And I tried to bring a lot of the science into that as well. There's some deep stuff that I go through in this book. I really tried to draw a connection through some of the ancient cultures in a very interesting anomalous occurrence that seems to be a theme across the world. And there's some really mind-opening topics that I divulge, you know, through in the book.
Okay. And so is it in parts? So we have like this is the problem, this is the solution kind of breakdown, or?
I think originally what it started out as, in all honesty, was a book of just a guide to living life for the right reasons. And I started out with several different passages that I had written years ago, and I started to elaborate on them. But then as I started doing research, all these other things seemed more and more relevant to bring in. So, you know, some of the history about what's really happening with the governments of the world and, you know, the environmental issues, all of those, just it really, I felt compelled to speak on those as well, you know, as best as I could with doing as much, you know, research as I was able to do. But I'm really just trying to, in a whole way, look at the individual and what we're doing collectively, you know, and really bring that to the reader. And there is an ebook version that I did at like $7.99, I believe.
There's a hard copy version as well as an ebook.
Yep, and the ebook is nice. It's got links, active links to all of my sources. So there's about 20 pages of citations, and that's so there's a lot of extra material that there's access to through the ebook as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, a lot of my listeners know that I've gone through a pretty ridiculous battle with the healthcare system.
Yeah.
We're getting closer to the full reveal on all of this, but there's such an info monster. I haven't put it all out there at the same time, folks. But thanks for writing in and expressing your concern and support and concern when the show has slipped a week or two. Everybody thought I died, I guess. But I'm very much drawn to an article that you've written on your website called it's point seven on a list of things that you've written that are seven things to change the world.
Absolutely.
So let's not get hung up on the numbers, which is the order. You wrote it, so I'll go with that. But number seven is your own power. Great three words together again. I'm going to just read this for the people. I'm just going to say the first couple of lines here, and I want to spend some time on this with you. Right now, this very moment, you hold inside of yourself the key that has allowed this world situation to unfold is very simple and changeable. Our participation and consent through our awareness or lack thereof. We are changing the second piece of that equation right now. However, the first part of the equation is up to you. And that's absolutely true. I can attest to this as much as possible in the healthcare industry. It is not really in your best interest to have people shepherding you around and telling you things and fitting you into spreadsheet categories and presenting with particular numbers. And you know, it's just a zoo in there.
It absolutely is,
and
yeah.
I saw that it was a zoo, and I use it as little as possible. Specifically, I get blood tests regularly, and I have those blood tests analyzed by them. The results of those blood tests and what happens subsequently is thoroughly my business, my choice, and I've been told I'm making nothing but mistakes by people that predicted that I had far less time. I shouldn't be here right now if I did what they did and believed what they believed. So that was unacceptable. It's just that simple. I'm not doing that. But what are the numbers? Thanks. Okay, great. Thanks for identifying the problem. You're good at that still, and I'll handle this. And myself and some other people and some great, fantastic websites out there managed to pull this off. And I feel a lot better now because I'm not dealing with those people.
And you had mentioned to me, I believe, in a conversation that there was some spiritual benefits, I believe.
Oh, daily and immeasurably. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. That's me, though, and the folks can hear that later. We'll talk about that later. But I just did want to bring it up that you and I, although we've only spent a few minutes together, really, live in person, we have so much in common with this. And other than, I think I'm going to ask you to move that thing to the top of the list of seven.
Yep. I wanted to save the best for last.
I see. Okay, good. All right. Sure. Great. Well, yeah, you talk about the banking system as well, what a scam that is, and it's used to keep us down. So are you on board with everything you're writing? What I'm saying is, do you sometimes just wind up finding yourself a little bit depressed anyway when you look around and see all of this, despite the fact that you feel like you're on the right path to rectify?
Excellent point, and it's something that I spent some time on, because really when I found out some of the truth about this information, you know, and this is again just to my own research, but when I really feel like I started to recognize, you know, all of the horrors that we've contributed towards, that I have contributed towards, you know, through participating in the system, I was devastated. You know, I don't want to be responsible for anyone being hurt or suffering. I mean, I don't think most people do, but most of us haven't made that connection. So it's difficult, and there's a transformation period, I think, that you kind of go through, and you kind of go through the stages of, you know, denial, depression, acceptance. But I think it's important, and this is a paradox I really tried to outline in my book, is that we do have to be aware of these things that are happening in the world, but we also have to maintain a balance and recognize that our perception and our energy and our positive thinking does have an effect as well. So I think there's got to be a balance, and I think everyone has to find their balance for themselves, you know. But for me, I just try to recognize that I do still put love out there. I do have to still remember that there's more good people in this world than there are that are trying to hurt it, you know.
Yeah, they're just not as loud. That's the that's the problem.
We've been conditioned to just kind of want to, you know, avoid things that aren't right in front of our face, and you know, I think we have to do this research and more and more people are doing this across the world. And as we do that, we're really bringing this message to each other. And this is a collective effort, and it has to be, you know, we each have to participate in this. And that's what's really going to, you know, I think start to make some changes that are going to be tangible, that we're going to start to see changing, you know, the landscape of our reality right now.
Well, people doubt this a lot of times. I know this because I used to be one, and I know other people, well, nothing's going to change. And that's not true, because it has changed over the years. Unfortunately, as I see it, a lot of things for the worse, you know, particularly in if you want to get, like some people would disagree and say, but what about all the computers and the phone? You know, if you like that, that's great. Right. But I'm talking about food. I'm talking about what has happened over the last several years with soil depletion, the lower nutritional content inside what we're supposed to be fueling ourselves with. And it's gotten worse and worse, and more of that stuff's been packaged. It changed. It didn't used to have corn syrup in every single thing. And that change has been almost silently corporately driven. And it seems like we're trying to do the opposite thing and be loud and in a private sense say, hey, everybody, understand these things are happening, and try to wake up and stop being oppressed by them.
Yeah.
It seems like the stealth mode, appealing to the senses at a more base level, it seems to be very successful for those people, more so, I would say, than how successful we've been in repealing that nonsense.
Yep, and I, if you listen to some of the great minds, you know, there's many great minds that I've just recently gotten introduced to, and one of them, and I don't know if you're familiar, but Terence McKenna.
Oh, yes.
Yep, and I love listening to him, and he had this theory, basically, that says, you know, that once we hit 5%, once we hit this 5% of people across the globe that are just awakened, it'll mathematically, exponentially, you know, completely take over. And I'd like to believe that, and I guess it really seems probable that we're already at that 5%, that we're climbing over. And, you know, all we can do is, I think, continue to, you know, make others aware. One of the biggest things that they've done is twisted our consciousness, and I keep going back to that word, but I think it's really, really fundamental. I think it's bedrock at a lot of the issues that we're seeing, and the reason that they're continuing and getting worse, you know. And
yeah, like we're conditioned to believe certain paradigms, even. Like there's only certain amount of questions you can ask about various topics that they lay out without drawing undue attention and irritation and scorn to yourself. You know,
absolutely.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, I do. There's a lot of stigma that goes along with it, and it's very easy for somebody to say, oh, they're a conspiracy theorist, and, you know, what a terrible thing that they've done, that they've manufactured a society that can take anybody that steers away from the norm and just call them that, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've lost your audience. But I think more and more information is coming forward that really is, it's fact. You can see, if you look at the evidence, you know, it doesn't take a genius to be able to understand what's happening when you objectively review.
There's a particular viral clip that's going around the internet now of one of these purported ISIS assassins in Paris shooting a policeman in the head. And everybody said, oh, my God, it's terrible. This policeman got shot in the head, and this is so terrible. But when you look at the film, the bullet hits the sidewalk, if it's even a bullet. You can see the white dust explosion, the sidewalk popping up like. But it's not a headshot exploding like a watermelon with blood flying everywhere. And the guy's still moving around and looking around afterwards. And yet, roundly reported in so many different outlets, this officer was killed and, oh my God, this is terrible. If they're lying about that,
what else could there be?
Why didn't they say, oh, isn't that great? The guy missed his head by 4 feet. What a dummy. At least that guy gets to live, you know? But no, they had to make it like, oh, this guy was killed. Clearly he's not. He wasn't even close. The guy might be deaf, you know? You got a gun going beside your ear like that. But
he's
not blown up. And so that's one little lie on tape. And they are still saying, you know, no, that's not it.
To not only what they bring attention to, because I've learned really the things that they focus on in the news serve two functions. They're either about to lie to you about that subject, or they're trying to really divert your attention away from some other important thing that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting to me that there's so much that goes unreported. There was an attack, 2,000 people in Nigeria, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's completely gone, you know, that hasn't even been whispered through the media, and I wonder why, you know, that's...
Well, there's no money there. That's the reason. There's no potential to earn anything. They're not just going to all of a sudden whistle in some crack security force that's making a ton of money.
Oh, I think you really have to pay attention to both hands. It's like watching a magician, you know, it's a sleight of hand. I think that's a good metaphor for it, is you know, whenever something's happening in the one hand with the magician, oh. you have to watch the other hand, and that's where the trick is. That's where we're being.
Absolutely. You know, did you see the picture of the politicians of Europe supposedly showing solidarity against these terrible terrorists? And
I did. I saw all the media.
Oh, God. Here, we'll get a police to build a cordoned off area where you puppets can walk around like a bunch of freaks and try to convince us once again. That
and
this thing.
Was that the event that I guess Obama didn't go to that event, and they were like, oh, he doesn't care about terrorism.
Maybe he just didn't want to do a photo op. He does them at home all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Don't need to go there to do that thing. And then further, they had there was an Israeli publication that put that picture out, and for some reason airbrushed out the three female representatives that were there, Angela Merkel and a couple other gals from.
So interesting how much is manipulated and manufactured.
But everything else about it is totally true, Lisa. Every single thing. Just because they fudge some details and lie about stuff doesn't mean the overall picture. They just do that to, there's no sound logical reason to do that. The whole thing's a lie.
Yep, and this is not necessarily the focus of my book. But again, I took a big section because I think it's so important for everyone to become aware of these things. But there's a method to this, and it's I liken it to mafia tactics back in the day when they would have, you know, maybe a mafia, a certain gang, go and basically terrorize a shop owner and then have those same people come and offer them protection and basically paying these people who harass them for protection from themselves, you know, and that's what we're seeing, but just it's on a very, very much larger scale.
Yeah, and we're the ones paying for our own protection, and it doesn't happen anyway.
Exactly, and it's basically it's a problem, reaction, solution, you know, outcome. Kind of system that they've been working with, and it's not that hard to do it. They've been doing it back since the 1600s.
Sure. Well, it explains the dumbing down of school children. I mean, the last thing you need are the critical assessment skills to see what a scam this is.
And that ties right into, I think, the medical things that you were talking about, because that's why they put the fluoride in the water, and that's something I've done a lot of research on, and it's amazing to me how few people understand. And that's something in my own personal life. I've been off of fluoride for about a year. I've gotten sick only once since I've been off fluoride, and I should have probably been sick, you know, several times living in Rochester, frigid Arctic zone.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing is that I've noticed my cognitive awareness has exceeded where it ever was before. I have so much more focus. I feel so much more awake. And
you attribute this to the lack of fluoride in your, because not much else has changed in your intake?
Well, I try to eat organic, you know, I try to limit my, but, you know, just like everybody else, I stop at a fast food place sometimes.
Okay. And do they have organic in there?
Well, there's certain fast food places. That,
oh, really? I don't know any that have organic in
it. I don't know any. Oh, there's Panera, I think, does organic. Few. Hopefully more.
Okay. So, have you got some plans? How do you want to get this word out some more? You're on the show here, and hopefully you'll do more. And
I appreciate it so much. I'm started a second book. I've been doing a lot of writing for a new website that's going to be up called Life Flower. They basically go through Earth We Are One, which is connected with Collective Evolution, and these are all on Facebook. They're just different groups that are kind of doing a lot of the same thing that I'm trying to do. So it's a universal mission. I think we're all just trying to bring forward the truth and, you know, bring forward the message that we're all connected, you know, some positive stuff along with information.
Information.
So those are the plans. You know, I just keep trying to do interviews and do as many talks as I can. I was talking to my friend about doing a lecture out in California, so hopefully that will go through. I'll let you know about that detail.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
But either way, you know, I'm going to continue to do presentations, and I'm going to do some videos as well. That's a project I want to start to kind of branch out into.
You're going to do videos?
Yep, some video presentations. Not everybody's a reader. I love reading, but not everybody, you know, wants to pick up a book. So I still want to keep bringing forward all this information and what I believe to be a good message, and do that through as many venues as I can.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.